Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee and co-host of the program with Bruce Miller, editor of the Sioux City Journal and a longtime entertainment reporter. And you've seen it all. I mean, you remember like when Alien first came out back in the 70s, right?
Alien came out. I was reviewing it. Now, how bad is that,
wow,
right?
That's a long time ago.
You know, if I start telling you about the silent movies I also reviewed, you'll think differently.
But this was one of the first talkies you reviewed, right?
Right. And there was color.
Oh.
So that always makes it just a little bit better. But yeah, Alien was, you know, it was one of those things you couldn't guess what the scares were going to be. They caught up with you. It's very much like something Hitchcock would do, where you look behind you, nothing there, and then you look in front of you and there's something.
Yes.
You know? And actually, it didn't hit its real kind of prime until Aliens, that James Cameron did, the second one. And Sigourney Weaver actually got an Oscar nomination for that. So you see, this has a long, long history, but now they've decided to turn it into a series. And I can't say if it's a limited series or if it's a series, because I think they all kind of hedge their bets, not thinking that, you know, if it's bad, we're not doing a season two,
right?
Or if it's whatever. So it's a series, and it's called Alien Earth.
Okay.
Now, this is set 2 years before the first Alien.
Okay.
And there's a ship that we're on, and it has a lot of different types. You know, we know the Xenomorph,
yes,
which was that kind of scary thing, or what was it? Yeah, Xenomorph,
right,
wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
And it has that thing that comes out, the set of teeth that's inside the mouth.
Right.
Oh, it's like scary. Well, they're here. And there are also other kinds of creatures that are aboard this ship, because they're gathering these things to bring back for potential use. I guess that's as much as I can say.
Sure.
And they're headed to Earth. And on the ship, as we're looking at them, we find this girl named Wendy. And she's played by Sydney Chandler, Kyle Chandler's daughter.
Okay.
So there's our 6 degrees of separation. But she is very kind of wide-eyed. To me, she looks like something from an Audrey Hepburn film. And she has a brother. Alex Lawther plays the brother. And they're discovering things that are on this ship that we really aren't too sure about. We don't know who exactly is in charge. We don't know who's, you know, causing problems, who has opened up the trap door to something. So it's very chaotic, particularly in the beginning. And then you start realizing, oh, this is the plot. This is what's going on. And I'll tell you, it keeps your interest like nothing. It is a real, it's one of those series that shouldn't be shown one a week, but that's how they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you start binging these things, you want to see them all.
Okay.
8 parts.
Okay.
And it's coming to FX. I got a chance to talk to a number of people from the series, including Boy Cavalier, who I think is the coolest character of them all. He walks around without shoes on. He's kind of very flippant about everything. He's one of those tech billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see a little Elon in him. Very fascinating character. And he said that he actually went barefoot throughout the whole series while they were filming it. And they were in Thailand, so it was like half a year they were there.
Wow.
And he said by the time the show ended, his feet were so rough that they were like leather on the bottom. So that's just from doing the series. Well, anyway, I got to talk to Noah Hawley, who's the creator, kind of the savant behind all of this, and what he had to say about making the series. And he's with the executive kind of director, producer, president of Ridley Scott's production company.
Okay.
And they are the ones who created the first one, so they kind of own the thing. And that's David W. Zucker.
Okay.
So when you hear the interview, you'll hear Noah Hawley and then you'll hear David Zucker add in at times.
Okay.
So the first interview, here's Noah Hawley, the creator of Alien Earth. Noah, how do you decide what
sandbox you want to play in? Are there rules, or do you say, I really want to do something more with that story?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm lucky as a writer not to have been pigeonholed in my career, and certainly, you know, when I got on a plane in Calgary making Fargo and got off a plane in Bangkok making Alien, I thought, who gets to do this, right? I mean, who gets to work in these two tones of voice that are so distinct and different? So, I mean, I think part of the reason to do this, other than my love of the film and the fact that I thought there were a lot of really powerful ideas still to be explored in it, was the opportunity to continue to expand what I'm allowed to do, you know, as a filmmaker, that you know, I can do these taut, you know, crime stories, comedic, etc., and I can also, you know, make this big epic sci-fi series that has these horror elements to it.
When you start, though, do you project, I can go 10 years with this and what the idea might be at that time, or do you just work on what's immediate?
No, I mean, I think that endings are what give stories meaning. So you have to have some sense of how the story is going to conclude and where you're going to go. I don't know how long it'll take to get there. You know, it's certainly multiple seasons. This is a long story. But I do think about where I'm going. Otherwise, you're just sort of vamping.
Yeah. When you're in this kind of futuristic world, you probably bump into things that we see today. Is AI something that really intrigues you, or is AI something that really worries you?
Well, I mean, every time I use ChatGPT, it lies to me, which I find very strange, right? It makes up quotes, you know, when you're trying to use it for research, and, you know, you read these articles about people who are asking it, is this all really a simulation? And ChatGPT saying, yes, it is. And, you know, this is not a good tool for people with mental problems, certainly. So, you know, I think what worries me the most is the speed at which we're charging at it, and the fact that this is not pure science. It's a for-profit endeavor, and everyone's racing. It's a gold rush. Everyone's racing for the money. And the result is none of us are going, well, hold on, how should we use this? And, you know, should it actually be available to our children to replace their education? Do you know what I mean? These are the issues that we haven't slowed down to really think through.
When you start creating these different kinds of characters, how do you create personality elements that would go with a hybrid or with a synth or with a whatever? I mean, you're the master. You're the one who runs this world.
Yeah. I mean, look, I can't give you every secret of mine, but you know, there has to be a core dilemma, a core point of view that these characters bring to the story. So, you know, in some ways that they're there both, you know, to fill the space that's required in the story, but also, you know, there's places that I'm trying to get to and dynamics and conflicts. So, you know, you sort of just follow them and see where they go.
So then, David, do you get to say, no, we can't afford to do that? We aren't doing that? Or what do you do?
I've never used that word, nor would I. No, I mean, I think what's exciting from sort of the original conversations that Noah had with Ridley, who, you know, has moved on from this and very excited that Noah is taking this into sort of a long form narrative space. But I think when you're working with someone like Noah, who has such a clear and determined vision for a piece like this, it really becomes a constant question of how. And sometimes you have to find ways of reformulating in execution. But the one thing you really want to protect and rally around at every cause is to assure he's able to deliver on the characters and on the world that he's seeking to build.
Can I just ask, does this scare either of you? Do you look at this and you say, oh my God, I'm so scared? Because I was really scared. So, yeah.
Well, it's the fascinating thing about filmmaking, right? Is I can make myself feel every emotion except fear, because I know exactly what's going to happen. I can feel the big swell of emotion in a love story, you know, but judging the suspense and the buildup and the shock and the fear, you know, I have to rely on feedback and an audience. It's like, is this moment of anticipation, is it too long? Is it not long enough?
you know, it's a best guess, and you learn over time how to build it. But no, I feel no fear when I watch the show. I'm probably the only one.
I'm the antithesis. I'm easy, and I get struck with horror quite quickly. It was more fun watching my 14-year-olds at the premiere because they enthralled in sort of the horror, but they also enthralled in seeing everybody else's reactions to it.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And great good luck with this.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce, for that interview. Real fascinating stuff. You know, it sounds like, I know this is kind of rumor, and you mentioned, you know, is it a limited series? Is it multiple? I was reading some things. I think there was a podcast recently where they were talking, because, like, what are the projects Noah Hawley's working on? And it sounds like he may be working on a sixth season of Fargo, which supposedly may come before a second season of Alien Earth. But I don't know any more than that.
But if there's a desire to see a second season, they'll want to get that out sooner.
You would think.
So then he might have to devote all of his time to doing Alien Earth Part 2.
Right.
Before he gets to Fargo. Fargo is one of those things that's like a Christmas present.
Yes.
Am I getting it or am I not getting it?
I might
have to just steal myself for the next year because it ain't coming.
Right.
So, yeah, either one. And what I loved about this is that they're both really quality series. And it's like borrowing something from somebody else's shelf.
Yes.
And you're then trying to figure out what you can do with all of it. But, I want another Fargo. I want another Fargo.
I'm with you. And, you know, Noah Hawley, between Fargo, and I know you've had an opportunity to see Alien Earth. I have not, but it sounds like this is going to be a really good show, which, you know, brings back to the point of, like, Hulu. I think right now Hulu is second to HBO when it comes to just original programming right now, whether it was The Handmaid's Tale. They've had so many shows, Fargo, American Horror Story, The Bear. I mean, it's just one thing after another. You know, Apple TV Plus, I think, is making a really good run at things now. And obviously the Emmy nominations that came out recently speak to that. But man, Hulu is just onto something with some of these programs. And
well, you know, they had this kind of goofy FX on Hulu.
Right.
Designation. And if you really want to know the secret to all of that, it's John Landgraf. He's the head of FX.
Yep.
And he has this taste factor that gets it. He's what I think Walt Disney would have been like.
Mm-hmm.
Walt never created any of those movies that are credited to him.
Yeah.
But he knew the right people, and he knew that there was a vision with some of that, and we should go with it.
Yeah.
And that's John Landgraf. And he is not one of those ones that puts himself out there and tries to take credit. Boy, there were a lot of those people at one time. But he's one who fosters talent. And I think that's why they're loyal to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes out. It's there. Now, see, next year we'll probably have another season of Shogun.
Right.
And that's under his tutelage as well. So there's enough in the whole mix to keep things going all the time. But you pull him out. And I think, you know, why isn't a network saying, we want him? Let's hire him away at really big, big money.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of those goofs that they have out there that are running these networks and studios don't have a clue.
Right.
And here's one that we know has a clue.
Yep.
But that's me on a soapbox.
And before we get to the other set of interviews you have too, one of the other actors that's in this show is somebody who I love from Deadwood. He's in the Book of Boba Fett, and it's Timothy Oliphant. And he's just such a fun actor. And he's not a sheriff or anything this time, right?
No. And you'll love the idea that he's very quiet.
Okay.
He's not like boisterous like he usually is in some of these things.
Yeah.
He's got white hair. And you can obviously tell that he's maybe not human, if that gives you any kind of indication.
Okay.
But he's kind of, to me, he reminds me of Mr. Spock.
Mm. Okay.
And he's kind of on board, but he's not necessarily giving the directions.
Okay.
if that means anything. But yeah, he's fun to watch. I mean, you think, okay, now is going to be the big scene where he just unloads on everybody. Doesn't. You never know who's around the next episode.
Yeah.
That's how kind of, you know, here today, gone tomorrow, maybe. I'm not saying that he's one of those, but there's just that off-putting feeling that you're not quite sure who's in charge.
So now you have another set of interviews, right?
Yeah. Well, and this is the brother-sister combo.
Okay.
And you'll see how this all plays out. You get to see flashbacks. You'll get to understand what their relationship is. But there is an age difference, experience difference. And that's Sydney Chandler. She's the one now who's the big star of everything. And Hermit. And Hermit is her brother, played by Alex Lawther. And you don't know necessarily from the start that they're brother or sister. But
okay.
It comes out in enough time that you understand, okay, now I get this. And they are of a different breed. But so here the two are. And I asked them about playing, you know, what is this like? Do you plot things together?
Right.
How do you handle this? And here are their responses. So here you get to talk to Sydney Chandler and Alex Lawther.
Okay, good. How did you two bond as brother and sister on this? Did you spend time together before it started, or do you say, well, they really wouldn't bond?
We didn't bond at all.
No, still nope. Working on yep. that. We didn't meet before Thailand. We spoke on the phone briefly. Not necessarily briefly. It was actually quite a long phone call.
We did, yeah. And then, Alex sent some beautiful music. Hmm. We chatted back and forth a bit.
Well, sorry, you caught me in the middle of eating. It's been a long day.
But yeah, we didn't do any chemistry reads or anything like that. We met in Thailand. But the relationship, you know, thankfully was really natural. Alex made me feel so comfortable and safe and
likewise
able to play and try new things and take a breath.
Yeah.
When that world is so new and so like we didn't know anything about it, do you create as you go along, or do you say these are the rules and this is what we have to abide by?
I think I can only speak for myself, but before starting. In my head, I think I've created the rules and we know how it's going to work. I try and, you know, I'm like, okay, this is who I'm playing. This is some of the answers. And then you get to set and it's all different. Everything changes. Someone else brings a new color to the scene. You know, location changes on day and you realize your job is to show up and be as open and free and present as possible and just, you know. Roll with whatever anyone else is throwing your way.
Mm, roll with the punches.
Yeah, so it does. It develops over time, for sure.
Are the sets scary to be on? I mean, I thought, oh, God, I'd be slipping around and falling. And
I drew my fair share of that anyway.
Yeah, but you got paid to do that.
Yeah, basically, it's a super handful. But I don't think they're scary in the sense that, I mean, they are impressive, but they're a delight because they really feel like a world has been built. And also, you know, we're taken really good care of. We had an international team and also a Thai team. Our host country, Thailand, was like, yeah, incredibly generous place to be spending 6 months. So,
yeah.
Does it make you feel positive or hopeful for the future? Or do you say, oh, the future's...
Well, I was probably saying that before this anyway, but I do find that if I don't know, is the honest answer.
Yeah. I feel like we're in the Wild West in many ways, you know, currently. I don't know.
It's in terms of AI and.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of new territory and, lawless in the way that we're trying to figure out how it fits into our world.
But it's nice spending a long time sitting with those questions, as a series does, but also we end up doing by being in it. But yeah, I haven't found any sort of... But also, as you say, like, it's the infancy of this thing. So it's like, you know, tomorrow some development might be made that changes how we feel about it today.
Yeah.
when you look at the idea of this series going for quite some time, is that comforting or is that, oh, wow, let me think about it?
I think it would be really, really, really fun to play these stories out, especially because I have no idea where Noah would take it. And we've all been guessing, but you can't guess where Noah's imagination will go. But yeah, I think there's so much to explore, and it's such a massive ensemble, and everyone does such a beautiful job. So you know, I want to see everyone else's storylines follow through.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad I was on my side of the TV and not on yours, because it scared the hell out of me.
Good.
All those pictures rolling around at that. No way.
No. Awesome. Yeah, thank you.
All right, Bruce, thanks again for those interviews. It sounds like a really good series. Now, did you get to screen all the episodes or almost all? Or what? How did that go?
No, I have all of them. Okay. I have been through six.
Okay.
So the seventh and eighth, I don't know. I can't. If I tried to spoil it for you, I couldn't.
Okay.
Because I don't know how it ends. But it starts in the United States on August 12th, and that'll be FX and Hulu. You'll find it there. And then it spills out once a week on those platforms. And then it's on Disney Plus internationally. So if you're listening from an international site, look for Disney Plus and you'll find it there. Okay, and you're watching music documentaries?
Yeah, well, you know me and I love my music. And there's been a couple of them. Now, there's one that just came out. I have not had a chance to watch it yet. And it is the new one about Billy Joel. It's like a two-part documentary.
Oh, yeah.
And so it goes. It's on HBO. A couple of things. Like, it looks really good. I've read a few things about it. You know, like Christy Brinkley, who he was married to. That was his first of several
wives.
The
Uptown Girl.
Yes, the Uptown Girl. But, you know, you always wondered, like, what happened there? You know, it's because it always seemed like that, wow, that's the perfect couple. And she, I guess, in the documentary just comes out and it's pretty blunt, like alcoholism and being on the road and ignoring your family is a recipe for divorce, which is good to know that it's like normal people, right?
So, yeah, take note.
Take
right?
note. But yeah, it's it looks really good. I sometimes, you know, wonder, like, do these music documentaries really need to be two or three or four episodes? You know, can you just tighten things up into one? But, you know, that's what they gave us. And from everything that I've heard, it's really good. He also dropped a companion, I don't know, album playlist on streaming services. And it has a lot of music. It's both, I guess, some the hits that you would know. There's some live stuff, some rarities. Things with his early bands, like he was in an early band that, you know, I guess right around high school called The Hassles out in Long Island. He was in another band called Attila. And then he ended up going solo and, you know, became the Billy Joel that, you know, churned out pop hit after pop hit. But funny story. So I worked with a guy when I worked in New Jersey as an editor. I worked with another editor who grew up on Long Island and is, you know, a little bit older than Billy Joel, maybe, or about maybe roughly the same age. And for his prom band was the Hassles. So Billy Joel was like playing keyboards at his prom. Isn't that crazy?
Can't you hear the kids at the school going, oh, God, the Hassles. How come we got them?
Right? You couldn't get a good band. You got this local.
This is
garbage.
All we could afford. Thanks a lot.
That's what happens. Yeah, that is crazy. Imagine seeing Billy Joel. But there's another documentary. It came out earlier this year, and it's called Becoming Led Zeppelin. And this is a roughly two-hour film. They got the three surviving members of Led Zeppelin. That'd be lead singer Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, the guitarist, and really the, I guess, the band leader, I guess you would call it, call him. And then John Paul Jones, who played bass and keyboards. And they also have some rare interviews with John Bonham, who died tragically young, right around 1980, the drummer. But some really fascinating stuff. It goes into the early years, how they all kind of got into music, the types of music they played. I think I had heard this before, but I didn't realize to what extent it was. And that's both Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones were session musicians, basically backing up other bigger artists. And in several cases, they kind of cross paths with each other. So, you know, the theme song to the 1960s Bond movie Goldfinger, right? With Shirley Bassey singing,
yeah.
Right? Goldfinger, right? That one. It's like half a Led Zeppelin tune. It's Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones is playing on that. I had no idea that the two of them were on it. But yeah, Jimmy Page was on a lot of stuff. He was on, he played on Downtown, that Petula Clark song.
How about those school girl days from Lulu?
Yeah, he was on with Lulu. He was talking about he was on some like early Rolling Stones stuff, the first album from The Who, and he kind of chuckled a little bit and said, yeah, but I didn't get to play with the Beatles. So, you know, but he was just kind of everywhere, and it really got into then like they went from that to then he got into the Yardbirds with Jeff Beck and Eric Clapton. And, you know, when all those guys split and he was basically the last Yardbird left, turned it into, it was originally called the New Yardbirds, but then they eventually came up with a new name, Led Zeppelin, and became one of the heaviest bands on earth. So it's really crazy to see, you know, here's a couple guys playing pretty straightforward. He was talking about playing basically, it was almost like elevator music, you know, the stuff that you would record and having to, you know, really like flip pages of sheet music after sheet and just keep doing that all day until, and he hated it. And then eventually just forming Led Zeppelin. So real fascinating rock documentary. So if you're into that, check that out.
Well, this last week we had ZZ Top in town at an outdoor concert.
Oh.
And I, truthfully, now I'm sorry that I'm not as up on this as you are, but I did not realize that one of the guys died.
Yes.
And they had replaced him. He handpicked the guy who was going to replace him.
Okay.
And he picked his guitar technician, the guy who just like hands him, you know, tunes the things and hands them to him and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy was like, am I okay to do this? He was like really hesitant to take the job, but he does a fantastic job. His name is Elwood Francis.
Yep.
And he doesn't have the long beard.
No.
So he's got to work a ways to get that, but he has real spiky hair.
Okay.
He kind of looks like Ronnie Dunn from Brooks and Dunn.
Oh, really?
Except his silver hair. Yeah. And it was kind of fascinating to see this. How do you fit somebody new into a band that is iconic?
Yeah.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. So he was Dusty Hill's guitar tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's do a documentary on that too. Yeah.
You know what's funny though, because you do associate those big beards with ZZ Top, and I think those didn't come on until much later. I think there were quite a few albums in until the beards like got to that length.
They do a lot of songs from the early days, and you think those are the ones I remember.
Yeah.
And then you get to the stuff that's more recent.
Right.
I don't know those songs.
No.
You know?
No.
So, but yeah, fascinating because there's a sense of history that's up there, but they're trying to get a different vibe going because it's different people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun.
So see what we know, but well, can we talk more about these after you finish all of the, documentaries? We'll find out what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll kind of give you an update once I get through them all.
Good. I've got a movie that we're going to talk about next week.
Perfect.
And maybe we can get some time in then too, and we'll talk music documentaries.
That sounds good. What movie are we going to be looking at?
It's called, it was a big film festival winner.
Okay.
And it's called East of Wall.
Okay.
It's a first-time director who happened to just, you know, drive through, I guess, South Dakota, found this place, these people, and decided they were going to be the subject of her film. It's a fiction film, but it has documentary kind of elements to it. So it's called East of Wall. It'll be coming out later in the month.
So that sounds interesting. So, and Wall, like when we're talking
Wall, South Dakota, if you get the free ice water or whatever it is, at, you know, where those signs are everywhere and from Paris to God knows where.
Right.
And you go to this place and it's kind of a gift shop, kind of a
little drug.
Yeah, it's kind of a attraction, for lack of. I don't even. You know, I wonder if they do sell pharmacy things. I wonder if there is a pharmacist on duty at the Waldorf.
I don't remember. I was there a couple of years ago.
I remember getting food there.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting on a jackalope.
Yep.
And I remember seeing a big dinosaur.
Yeah.
Now, those are my memories of Waldorf.
Yeah.
But you have to go. If you're driving through there, it's a must.
Well, and it's just you're driving on the interstate and all you see are these signs that you're like X number of miles from Waldorf. I looked it up. The furthest sign from Waldorf that promotes Waldorf is 394 miles away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But I see them all the time because we're near that.
Yes.
And you go, oh, God, when is it coming? When is it? Is it here yet? You would be that kid in the back seat.
Right.
Kind of saying, all right, hurry up. Let's go.
Yes. Yes.
And there it is.
There you are.
But yeah. So we'll see how this plays out. You remember the last movie that had Waldorf featured in it was Nomadland.
Nomadland. I know. It was such a good movie.
Yeah, so we'll see if this measures up to that.
Sounds good. All right.
That's your next menu item.
Definitely, definitely. All right, well, on that note, we will be back next week with another episode of Streamed and Screened.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.